Hello and welcome to the Emerging Technologies Horizons podcast. I'm Arun Serafin, Executive Director of NDIA's Emerging Technologies Institute. On today's episode, we're coming to you from NDIA's 23rd Annual Science and Engineering Technology Conference here at the University of Texas San Antonio in Texas. The focus of this year's conference is how the department is aligning its investments in technology to meet the needs of the National Defense Strategy and the operational needs of our warfighters, ranging from work on technology discovery to prototyping to capability delivery. Special featured topics for this year include the needs of the humanitarian assistance and disaster relief missions, as well as talking a lot about success stories from current defense programs and current defense contractors. Another focus of the event is the strong and important work that we're doing in trying to tie Department of Defense missions and the activities of defense industry with state and local and regional technology cluster development initiatives. And we're in a great place for that because there's a lot of work going on down in San Antonio and in Texas as a whole to make this state and this area a technology leader and to tie those technology companies and those great groundbreaking university researchers to our federal missions, especially our defense missions. So today, to talk about that a little bit, I'm joined by two guests, Jim Pershbach and Drew Cheberly. In order to save time for our conversation, I'm going to keep their bios fairly short. Jim is the president and CEO of Port San Antonio. At Port San Antonio, he leads a team that provides strategic support to grow advanced industries on their 1,900-acre technology innovation campus, including work in things like aerospace, cybersecurity, manufacturing, and global trade. In addition to his work at the port, Jim serves his community in other leadership roles. He's past chair of both the San Antonio Chamber of Commerce's Aerospace Committee and Alamo College's Scobie Education Center. Drew wears multiple hats and is involved in multiple Texas-based organizations. He's executive director of both the Texas Chamber of Commerce executives and the National Security Innovation Council. He's also senior advisor and supply chain program manager of the Texas Association of Business. Please join me in welcoming Jim and Drew to today's podcast. Thanks for joining me, guys.
For having us.
So could you, you both have very different backgrounds, and I just touched on them briefly. So maybe Jim and then Drew, just talk about your background, how you got here, and what you're doing in your current positions.
Well, my background is very uninteresting. I'm just a lowly defense-based guy. I spent about 20 years in the industry. My parents were in the industry. And came down here to San Antonio. It was really the last post I did in the private sector. And saw what they were doing at the old Kelly Air Force Base and saw a tremendous opportunity, not because of the technology, but because of the people. So old Kelly, Port San Antonio is surrounded by tens of thousands of some of the greatest people you're ever going to meet, but they tend to be people who are somewhat disadvantaged. And when I first got this gig, a lot of people in the neighborhood said, Jim, you're doing the wrong thing. And I said, why? And they said, because those jobs are not jobs for the people from this community. And that is the biggest lie that we tell anybody, whether it's in this industry or any other industry. We have this myth of the best and the brightest. And so what we have done at the port is, yes, focus on technological development, but we've really been focusing on showing people that they can do it, moving the gatekeeper away from the front end. And in doing that, not only are we doing some great things in terms of technological development that I'd love to talk to you about, but more important, we are taking tens of thousands of young people and showing them there's an opportunity. In the past 5 years of this strategy, we've had over 120,000 kids come through, go through programs. And I take no credit for any of those brains, but we've got kids who've gone on to MIT, to A&M, to UT Austin, Alamo colleges. More important, we've got kids who realize that they can make a future doing anything they want.
That's great. Drew?
Now, you said that's not an interesting background, but I have an even less interesting background. So I came out of the political world, economic development world, have been in chambers of commerce for several decades. During the mid-2010s, was involved with helping to bring several defense innovation units to Texas and to Austin, the largest of which was the Army Futures Command. We spun off a group that worked whole of state and has worked with several innovation units around the state on bringing more missions in, defending them, connecting problem owners and problem solvers, and helping to build the infrastructure that will accelerate national security innovation for Texas.
Yeah, it's interesting what you're both saying. There was a time, you know, let's go back to World War II, where the whole nation felt like it had a role in participating in the manufacturing and the innovation and the people side of our national defense. And we've, like you're saying, we've moved a little bit away from that. And so it's efforts like this that sort of reconnect those big national missions that people maybe don't understand so well, and tying them back to things like local jobs and local companies. And that, I really commend you both for doing that kind of work. So, you know, working here in San Antonio, Jim, then tell us about what's so special. What's so special about San Antonio?
Well, San Antonio is a wonderful place. I knew about what was going on in San Antonio before I could find San Antonio on a map. But it's for over 120 years, we have been doing aviation here in this community. It grew. I've got a picture back of them building Camp Kelly, and you've got horse-drawn wagons. You've got a steam-powered ambulance for some crazy reason. You got Curtis JN4 Jennies in the background, and that is the people from the community that built that. And you made a really important point when you talked about how we used to have a lot more people viewing national defense. What I think has happened, and it's the fault of us in the defense industrial base, we have so professionalized this, we have so regimented what we are doing, that we have created these closed societies. When you look at the FARs and the DFARs, when you look at the way we grant clearances.
Federal acquisition regulations.
Yeah, federal acquisition regulations, defense federal acquisition regulations. We have created a closed society. And we've done some amazing things on that. Nobody does big projects better than we do in this country. But look at the acquisition cycle times that it takes us to do a big project, and then try and find some solutions that are innovative and small. We have on our campus a project I'm particularly proud of because I had nothing to do with it. It's a 72-foot tall laser with a 20-kilowatt laser, a 72-foot tall robot with a 20-kilowatt laser attached to its arm. But it's not a directed energy weapon. It takes the coating off of an airplane, and it does it in 60% less time than people, saves all of the chemicals, all the wastewater, and it turns that coating into 2.5 pounds of dust that you could toss in your kitchen garbage can. The person who thought of that was a computer software salesman. And so those missing pieces are not going to be found by government fiat. They're probably not going to be found by the big system integrators. It's going to be by finding the technological solutions from the non-traditional contractors. And in San Antonio and Austin, one of the things that Drew has done so well with the NSIC is find these folks who are not part of our little circle, our little defense industrial base. Invite them in, look at the ideas. And here's the beautiful part. You don't need to share any secrets as to what you're looking for. Just find those technologies. And if we do that, we're going to increase the pace of integration. We're going to increase our resource utilization in terms of talent and technologies around the country. And we're going to find some ways to do some amazing things. And the salutary benefit, we're going to put a lot of people to work.
Right. The idea that we've professionalized this service, I think it ties into the idea that the Department of Defense for a while was in a mode of, if I need something, I can build it at my laboratory behind my barbed wire fences or with my trusted defense contractors who you know, are part of NDIA as well. But the world and the way technology is developing is changing, like you're saying, and the kinds of innovations you're talking about, a directed energy laser system, which is an emerging technology used to address the sustainment cost, which are eating us alive. That's exactly the kind of thing that we need to be working on. So in the process of trying to embrace this idea that innovation is going to come from a lot of different places, I give the department some credit in that they're trying to plant their innovation centers in places that can tie into those regions. Drew, you touched on Futures Command landing here in Texas at Austin. Could you talk about how that discussion went, how you described to the Army and how the Army started to understand the benefits of embedding themselves in a broader state level, even regional ecosystem to try to get done what Futures Command is trying to get done?
Sure. I do think the Department of Defense was really the leader in the country in trying to define the stakes and a new way of viewing, or really an old but new way of viewing the world. They were shifting away from Afghanistan and Iraq to great powers, and they were doing this in 2014, 2016, and then with a national defense strategy that talked about how we needed to out-partner and out-innovate near peer and pacing threats. These are not terms in which the mainstream of the political bodies at the national level were discoursing. And as you started to see legislation like the CHIPS Act that was finally signed in 22, this was a bipartisan bill, but it was one that broke along very different ideological lines than previously. And one could look at how the end result mattered, but it started to build a broader-based common purpose around pacing threats that the country had. And as Senator McCain and key leadership from the Army were looking at how to get outside of the fence line and how to incorporate new ideas and how to accelerate the pace of innovation, they wanted to get out of the Capitol area. And I think there were very good opportunities for them to go to Silicon Valley or to Boston or to Raleigh-Durham. Though Austin had been invited and down-selected, I didn't think we could succeed without the combined assets of Texas A&M, of UT San Antonio and San Antonio and Joint Base San Antonio, of Fort Hood and what became the Operational Test Command, and of Baylor University, not to mention Texas State, San Marcos, the whole Capitol Corridor, and the University of Texas at Austin. We needed to be able to bring all of those assets to bear to be able to move at pace, overcome regional rivalries, overcome institutional rivalries that existed. And I think today—
to extend beyond the football field, even to things like this.
Yes. Yes. Football may resonate in a state like Texas. So I would say overall that this, you know, what was good about the Texas proposal is that we asked how we can help, not what the Department of Defense would give us or do for us, but how do we help them solve problems? And I think being able to solve the problems of people with responsibility and money is the way to accelerate innovation.
Yeah, one of the challenges I think that we're going to face with innovation and manufacturing and to the sustainment issues that you're talking about is workforce. And so we're sitting here on a university campus having a later today a classified discussion about defense needs. And so we're starting to figure out how to connect the people who supply our workforce with the people who need the workforce, the defense industrial base, the Department of Defense. So could you guys touch on, you know, how you think these regional developments can support the workforce pipeline at all levels, right? I need trades, skilled trades, and I need nanoscientists, and I need everything in between. I worked on Capitol Hill for about 20 years. We used to think of education as more of a state and local issue, right? And then when we needed to tap into developing a pipeline, we better work with the state and local government. So could you guys talk a little bit about how you're thinking about workforce and supplying the workforce we need?
Yeah, I think workforce is top of our mind every single day. The first challenge, I love the defense industrial base. It was very good to me for 2 decades, very good to my family. The challenge is most young people don't want to be part of it. It's not exciting. And then we close it off. You mentioned a classified discussion. Not going to ask you to share any classified secrets. I'm going to ask a rhetorical question. How much of that is really classified and really needs to be done in a classified environment? But the first step is to get people intrigued. So one of the things we have, we just built a $75 million entertainment center on our campus. We're never going to make a profit off of it because we've dedicated all of our profits to our educational foundation. But in there is the largest and fastest gaming arena of its kind, at least in the country, probably in the world. We brought in 100 kids from the community the other week, and we had them build their own PC. there were 20 members of the 16th Air Force that came in and mentored him. There were people from the gaming companies that came in and mentored him, people from the defense industrial base. We're not going to get all those 100 kids wanting to go into the industry. But out of that, we're going to have programs we can keep bringing those kids back to. And they articulate to the University of Texas at San Antonio. I'm on the board of trustees, Arleigh, the Lake University, so I'm going to give them a pitch and their NSA DHS certified programs. But it's the attracting people and showing them they can do it. The second thing we've got to do is we've got to demystify it. It is nowhere near as difficult as people make it out to be. If you can give me somebody who has general aptitudes, can pass a health exam, we can teach them how to fly. It's not the hardest thing to do on the planet. We can teach them how to be a maintainer. We can even get them into computer technology, cyber technology, chips manufacturing. But you've got to attract the people first. And I think we have done a poor job of that within the defense industrial base because we haven't made it cool, sexy, and exciting the way young people want to do it. The next step, and yeah, I'm going to let
Funny thing is, you know, you talked about gaming. You can watch infinite Hollywood movies. Yep. It is pretty exciting stuff.
It's exciting stuff, but they don't see going. If you run down the roster of the members, none of those are going to hit the young people's roster of that's who I want to go work for. But the second step, and this is where I give Drew and the NSIC a ton of credit. You can't just have innovation for innovation's sake. And what Drew did that he deserves more credit than he's ever going to take for is what he just mentioned. The bringing in the different disciplines and the different cores. Because while you shouldn't put the gatekeepers up at the front end, you need to have that progressive gatekeeping so it doesn't become just crazy innovation for crazy innovation's sake. Make the people who understand the underlying challenges, the industry, make them part of the analysis, but start having the conversation early.
Well, Jim, you are wiser than a tree full of owls. That was on point across so many areas. So I'm going to try and talk about things you left for me. I think one is that we need to have a deeper, wider pipeline at the PhD level. These are, you know, I've been in economic development a long time. The things that bring in the most wealth into a community are the highest value add stuff. You determine where you put your highest value operations based on where your executives want to live and where your transformational talent wants to live. We need more transformational talent that can work in the United States in the 14 critical technologies. I think the CHIPS Act and its potential for bringing in the advanced packaging, returning advanced packaging design, and the like are going to be the accelerants. We need to look at those for future G. We need to look at these for different areas where we have fallen behind China, and we need to be strategically building those research consortiums so that
one of the areas we talked about yesterday in the conference was energy, geothermal,
yeah.
For example.
Yeah. I think we've done a much better job in the United States on cutting edge energy technology. We can scale faster. We can translate faster. But I think we need to look at those areas in the leading edge of innovation and figure that part out. The second is, you know, Jim is leading this transformational effort. And you have others that are tasked, like the Army Futures Command or AFWERX or DIU, with transforming large bureaucracies. There's no place you go to school to learn how to transform a big, large, complicated enterprise from, you know, from legal to contractual to science to accelerant. We need to figure out how to put that into a box and educate a lot more people through that. So on the talent side, definitely we need to improve on throughput at the lower levels. I fear we're going in the wrong direction in some cases. but we can obscure it with the scale of Texas population growth here. So we, if we can figure out how to take strategically, give Jim more influence and more money to string together these interventions, these opportunities, these immersions, so that net net, we grow enrollment in computer science, STEM, engineering at far greater rates, then I think we can have a much deeper bench.
So one of the things you both touched on is the need to connect better state and local initiatives with federal initiatives. So what do you wish we could do better? So I'm from Washington, I'm here to help, and you know the pace we work at sometimes, but occasionally Washington does produce something useful. I'd argue CHIPS Act is an example of that. So what do you think are things that we are doing that we should keep doing, and what are things that you wish Washington was doing better?
I think Washington and the industry at large do a lot more good than bad. But there are areas where it is really difficult. The federal government, the federal infrastructure, and the defense industrial base has to look at macro scale. That's what you're built to do. That's the job. That's the mission set. Where you're going to find emerging technologies, where you're going to find emerging talent, and where you're going to work on testing and prototyping that has to be at a micro scale. And so it's developing the micro scale, but allowing it to develop somewhat independently. We can't, I think you mentioned while we were speaking earlier, we're not going to outplan a massive central plan bureaucracy. The strength that we have within our cultural system, within our social system, our economic system, is that we allow everybody to participate. And so if I had an ask of DC, and I do, I always have asks of DC, it's provide the support and the funding for these efforts. Don't let them go off and happen completely independently, but also don't interfere. Because the tendency in DC is always going to be to scale, to talk in billions, to talk in trillions, to talk in tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of people. And that just doesn't work if you're trying to be out there scouting for those missing piece solutions or those missing piece talents. Find the models that work and scale the system by duplicating them where they are. You asked what's special about San Antonio? We have deep capabilities in aviation. We have deep capabilities in cyber and signals. We have deep capabilities in medicine and data analytics. And we've got a ton of people. And so we match up our efforts around those core capabilities. We're not going to do nanotechnology here. We're not going to do stuff that's out of our area. But you can find those capabilities in virtually every community around the country. Build a system that does that connecting. And the showcasing of those talents and technologies, and I can talk about that here later, bore you, but do it in a way where you allow the concepts to get on the radar of Washington earlier without going through all the hoops we have to in the federal acquisition system, and we're going to scale it.
Drew, I just want to point out that you do nanotechnology in Texas, that Rick Smalley was from Rice University.
Absolutely, right?
I just want to give you guys credit that you do nanotechnology. Yeah. Sorry, over to you.
Yeah, I very simple. Pass a budget on time and fix acquisition.
Anything else? That's it.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, and there's a lot of people, you know, thinking about that problem. And again, maybe it's learning lessons from the state and local level that the federal government can sort of take on. And maybe that's tailoring acquisition, right? Tailoring the budgeting process to meet more local needs is something that we could learn from. So we only have a couple minutes left. Can you talk a little bit about how defense industry members, NDIA members, which are big, small universities, how they can connect with you, what kind of research and technology development manufacturing partnerships you're looking for to establish with our NDIA membership?
We would love to talk to anybody. We've got within Area 21, our museum down on the campus, the ability to showcase all kinds of emerging technologies and emerging talents. And here's the cool thing about it. It's a bona fide cultural museum. It's like Epcot in the 80s. Government can't buy out of there, but you can sure see what's available in the marketplace without having to jump through all the unsolicited proposal hoops. But come on down, talk to us, show us where there are some opportunities that we, San Antonio writ large, may be able to help. give us an opportunity to say our piece, and we are perfectly happy. I agree with Drew. If anybody can figure out how to pass a budget and fix the federal acquisition system, that would be a complete blessing. I'd love you forever.
Great. NSIC is it's an organization that is designed to be whole of state, to move beyond institutions, beyond regions, to focus on problem solving, to have a humble spirit, a collaborative spirit. And those that want to act in that vein are welcomed and help us to solve some critical issues. The state and locals are probably not good to look at for acquisition. In some ways, the state of Texas is harder to deal with than the federal government on acquisition. But the ability to grow risk tolerance, the willingness to take risks and the willingness to move above your individual interests are critical against the pacing threats the United States faces today.
That's great. And, again, the door's open down here, apparently, in San Antonio, Texas, looking for partnerships for all the NDIA memberships for all our government partners. I want to thank Drew Cheberly and Jim Pershbach for joining me today, talking about some of your local initiatives. Thank you all for watching another episode of the Emerging Technology Horizons podcast. I want to make sure you guys all go to our website at the NDIA website and the Emerging Technologies Institute website for all our future and upcoming webinars, events, our Tech 101 series, and these podcasts. Also, all our conferences that are coming up over the next 6 and 12 months. And make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Thanks for joining us.